in the purple sky. Baby's sleeping while its mother sighs. Talking about the rich folks. Rich folks have the same jokes, and they park in basic places. The priest is preaching from a shallow grave. He counts his money, then he paints you safe. Talking to the young folks. Young folks share the same jokes, but they meet in older places. So don't tell me about your success, nor your recipes for my happiness. Smoking bed, I never could digest.
From Detroit, that's Sixto Diaz Rodriguez, professionally known as Rodriguez, with Rich Folks Hoax. It's from his 2005 album, Sugar Man, the Best of Rodriguez. Rodriguez, oddly enough, gained widespread acclaim for his music, but not in the UN, in the United States. It was in South Africa that he came to fame. Where fans identified with his class struggle message music. He's still going strong at 74, and he's still living in Detroit in a derelict home that he had abandoned and fixed up, and he's part of the Detroit landscape, resisting organized efforts to empty the city and install a more, how should I say, a more desirable group of people. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday, and we are concentrating today in this edition. We're taking a look at the significant outcomes of the Democratic National Convention and their likely impact on the presidential election generally, but more specifically on progressive politics in particular. Well, of course, the convention ended with the official acceptance of the nomination by Hillary Clinton. Lots of tra-la-la, lots of high-energy, atmosphere and all of that. But it is important to understand this moment because we are experiencing it and we're seeing it unfold, and there is great, great significance to this moment. We talk about systems, we're seeing how systems are working, how systems operate, so that they remain intact, they remain impervious to change. And the significance, we're looking for the significance of things. You don't have to tell us what is immediately apparent. That's not so much of a deep... plowing you have to go through there to get to that, because it's on the surface, it's readily observable. When we're looking for the significance of things, we're looking for an analysis that puts us ahead of what is seen. And we get to understand events within a really different context altogether, and you get to that point of my favorite word, clarity. You may recall that since September last year, there have been questions. I have been on course with these questions about what is this movement, and how The people in this movement going to hold Bernie Sanders accountable? What is the nature of the contract here? And most particularly, what is he going to do with these 13 million votes? What is he going to do with his votes? How will they be leveraged? And for what reason will they be leveraged? And for what outcome will they be leveraged? Let me see how things went. But there is significance to what happened here, and we need to get to it. So we will be concentrating on that today. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention and its implications for progressive politics. And we're talking about the significant things that developed out of this convention. Just yesterday, David from Brooklyn told us what the most significant thing was. And we can now take it another step further. The significant thing he pointed out was we witnessed the public dismantling, execution, if you will, of a movement with the cooperation of the leader of that movement within the Democratic Party. But there's a lot to that, and we can develop that further today. Let's start with Jay from New York. Hello, Jay, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, you, Teresa, to your Hello. Audience. How are
Thank
you doing?
Thank you for that.
Listen, you know, I'm not going to say much because I know there's a lot of people out there that like to talk. The most egregious thing that Sanders has done, as far as I'm concerned, is his treatment of Nina Turner, which is basically not getting the type of play that it should in black media, white media, any media. This is someone who was a staunch advocate for Bernie Sanders, who did quite a bit of dirty work for him. It did the necessary things to bring people of color into his movement. And, you know, if we're going to be honest about it, Bernie Sanders was never really that accepted of black people. But we think that he was. But he really didn't go on black media in the manner in which he should have to put him in a better position, even with the shenanigans that was going on by the Hillary Clinton.
All right. Well, Jay, you're telling us what you think happened there. This is your report. However, I'm interested in you giving us the significance. What do you find significant about what you're saying here? What is the significance of that?
Well, the significance is that they really don't have any respect of the Democratic voters, that they play games to try to curtail us into voting for a party or for a person that doesn't have our best interests at heart. Is that he has an opportunity to, like Jesse Jackson did, to take his group and start something new that will challenge the system. But he doesn't have the will or the desire to do it. And that it's all a game. That's really, really boiled down to they don't have the will or desire to make
Well, you
us
gave us,
free.
You started us off today pretty strong, Jay. Thank you so much for calling
have
and getting us started today. I appreciate it. Joel from New York, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Joel.
How are you? You know, I think I'm going to turn my speakerphone off. It's a little muddled on my side. But
okay,
hang on.
Good.
Hi there.
Yes, much better.
Oh, good, good. So how's your week been, Eutrice? I hope it's been good.
It's been interesting observing this convention, process.
I hope you haven't watched too much of it. I mean, I've discovered over the years that when you watch these things for extended periods of time, you know, you plump yourself down into a couch or a sofa, it's akin to really having a frontal lobotomy. So, so what I've done is, you know, watch it in spurts. I've watched the important stuff.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I also can. I, pardon me.
No, you're selective in what you watch.
Right, right. You know, my speakerphone is still on. Let me just work on it for a sec. How's that? Hello?
Okay, so, yes, this is fine. So get us to what you think is the most significant thing coming out of the Democratic National Convention.
Well, I think the most significant thing is probably the most obvious thing, and I'd like to really talk about that, and that is if Hillary Clinton is elected president, she will be president. And as far as I'm concerned, and I've, you know, called your program enough times for, you know, for listeners to realize that for me, the politics, the only politics that really are important are the politics of resistance. But for the politics of resistance to have an empirical basis, to have a reality basis, one really needs to know what one is facing. And one of the things that struck me about this convention is that it was a kind of muddled conception of what Clinton brings to the fore. I mean, people had a kind of general idea of what, but what I'd like to do is kind of summarize what we can expect from her if she wins, and consequently, maybe how we can then design strategies of resistance to oppose her policies. And, you know, whether she brings a Democratic Congress or not, she's going to use it to pass the TPP and the TTIP, so-called trade agreements. She's going to launch liberal wars, so-called liberal wars across the Middle East. She will rattle sabers against Russia. She will relaunch Obama's so-called grand bargain to cut Social Security and Medicare under the pretext of a fiscal crisis. And should Wall Street falter, as I think it will, she will hold her nose and once again bail out her benefactors, rather bail in her benefactors. And
but what clues did you get? I mean, just observing the way things went at the convention, what overwhelming message did we get?
Well, you know, I think the message that we got is, I think, really patently obvious. It's the message of neoliberalism in all of its horror, and we really have to brace ourselves for that. What we didn't get, I think it might be a way to answer your question might be to talk about what we didn't get. And what we didn't get was a sense of reality of what is happening out there. The thing that really strikes me about these elites in both parties, it's easy to attack the Republicans because they're so insane, but we have to remember that once the Democrats attached themselves to the neoliberal agenda, they took the Republican program over, which is why the Republican Party elites are so enraged, that have always been so enraged at people like Clinton and Obama because of their absconding with the Republican program. And the Republicans, as a consequence, went further to the right and became insane.
Let me ask you the question this way. Mm. It was a very well-organized event. But in my view, it had all of the indications of a frenetic and frantic effort to cover up the panic that the Democratic Party is in. You know, you observe things. Everything was running very nicely, very smoothly, the same like the Republican Party. But the Democratic Party and the convention and the speakers and the whole thing, very nice and orderly and whatnot. But they were very, very indicative of a party doing everything possible to maintain a sense of calm when, in fact, there's no calm in this party at this moment.
But, you know, I saw something a little different, Patrice.
They are scared.
Yeah, you're right. I saw, you're right, but I saw something different other than an appeal to the Democratic voting electorate to be calm. What I saw was fear. Maybe that a desire for calmness comes out of that fear. Look, with the middle class on the ropes, with the working class all but disappeared, with the poor desperately clinging to the few crumbs that have fallen to them, The United States is but one recession away from being economically and politically untenable. And the only program the Democrats have, so-called free trade, private debt-fueled consumption, deregulation, privatization, Wall Street bailouts, and now bail-ins, are all proven losers for all but a few in 2016. And so they really don't know what to do. And that is why the thing that I noticed in the convention was fear. And the way the fear manifested itself was indirect and sometimes a direct expression of the need for the American political leadership to have enemies, foreign and domestic, to divert attention away from the damage that these elites do. The Wall Street elites, the corporate executives, the NSA, the carceral state trade deals that act as, you know, as firewalls against social and environmental resolution. That kind of thing. And another thing that I noticed is I saw the nexus, the marriage of state and corporate interests that promote geopolitical tension and fear and paranoia as business ventures from which profits can be earned. But we've seen this in the past through the mass destruction of Vietnam and Iraq. And really, as one of them, as probably the most despised candidate for U.S. president in recent history, Hillary Clinton needs these enemies because she doesn't really have any kind of program that's going to deal with the realities that are about to hit us. That is to say, the almost unspeakable catastrophes of climate change that are upon us now and are going to get much worse in the next few years. Possibility of an economic collapse. And finally, the strong possibility of a NATO-Russian war in Eastern Europe. Those are the things that are going to probably happen. And she doesn't know how to really deal with any of these things. So that's why you have this need for enemies, both foreign and domestic. And that is why Hillary Clinton is the most dangerous person on the planet, because she's a neoliberal militarist who is absolutely immune from the consequences of the crisis she creates. And armed with nuclear weapons, freshly upgraded by Mr. Obama, Clinton and her neocon cabal that she hopes to lead, remember what she's done. They destroyed Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and Syria. They surrounded Russia with NATO troops.
I'm
sorry for going on a rant like this, but the thing that I really implore listeners to think about is that we're really heading for an uncertain future, and establishment politics is completely off the wall. They don't know what to do, and they're making things worse. And the only politics that makes sense realistically and morally is the politics of resistance. And in order for us to do the right thing, we have to know what's happening.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your very considered opinion today, Joel. You put us on the map. Thanks again.
All right.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air. What was, for you, the most significant and revealing thing about the Democratic National Convention? Patricia, are you on the air? Okay. Patricia's not there. Well, then let's go to Kwame. Kwame, you're on the air.
How you doing, sister?
Fine, thank you. Now tell me, in your view, what emerged as the most significant thing about the convention itself? What happened there? What came to your mind as being most noteworthy?
I think most noteworthy to me was the amount of people who tuned in and who actually believed the nonsense. That's the most noteworthy. How many people are so brainwashed and really believe in this rhetoric that the Democrats had put out there in the last four nights? I mean, if you watched last night, they had some, I know I'm a Muslim, but you had some Muslim American up there talking about how his son died. First, his son wasn't even supposed to be in that army. It was illegal, Islamically, it was illegal for him to even be in that army. But he's up there posing, he's an American Muslim patriot. You got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's a Muslim American patriot. I mean, you got all these, all this nonsense up there. But the whole thing about what the Democrats have planned for America, how they're going to bring back the economy, how they're going to bring back the jobs. I mean, people actually believe this, and they're so caught up in the anti-Trump stuff that they can't see what has happened under 8 years under the Obama administration with Hillary Clinton in that administration.
Do you think, what do you think about the role of Bernie Sanders and this revolution within the Democratic Party? How was this treated in your view?
Oh, the role. Oh, of course. I mean, what they did to Sanders' campaign was criminal. I mean, just yesterday I was looking at some of the WikiLeaks things that I posted. I mean, it was criminal. But I mean, we can't let Bernie off the hook. Why is Bernie there with them?
That's a good question.
Bernie's not saying anything about their criminality. And you still have people, I mean, who are defending Bernie. I read an article by the city councilwoman, I forgot her name, from out of Seattle, Washington. And she said, well, we have to continue the revolution. And regardless of what Bernie Sanders says and what he does. And that should be the Bernie cult followers, that's what they should do. Okay. Break off from Bernie and what Bernie's doing. Bernie is a betrayer. I mean, he should be known as one, and we should call him one, and we should let him get off the hook. Everywhere he goes, we should protest him.
That's interesting. Let me ask you about the choreography of this Democratic National Convention. They had a lot. I mean, a stark contrast to the whiteness of the Republican convention. In stark contrast, the Democratic National Convention was so, quote, diverse, unquote. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. You know how it is, Patrice. You know, unfortunately, we have so many Negroes who actually believe in this system. You know, I mean, and they want to be blue-blooded Americans. They believe this stuff. It's unfortunate. I mean, people worship whiteness. You know, it's terrible, but it is what it is. I would suggest that, could you do I think you should do a YouTube video on the topic that you did yesterday.
Oh.
A two-hour YouTube video. I think that the information that you put out yesterday is too important to just, you know, have you find the PRN. You know, if you put it on YouTube, more people can have access to watching it.
Well, thank you so much, Kwame, for your call today. I appreciate it. Let's go to California. Janet is waiting. Hello, Janet.
Hi, Utrice. Thanks for taking the call. Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in.
Good. All right. Good to hear. And thanks to your audience.
Thank you so much.
Hello to your audience. Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Just wanted to follow up on you. You were asking what's the most significant thing that went on in the convention so far. And I think that you laid it out really well yesterday, just like the previous caller was saying, that I was one of the 13 million voters for Bernie, and we just got wiped out on Wednesday night. Slaughtered. Pardon me?
Completely wiped out. And what, how that was done and why it was done the way it was done is very interesting. And it goes to the question of the discomfort. You see, it looks as if the Democratic Party is settled with Hillary Clinton and she's in a safe place and all they need now is, you know, the enthusiasm about her candidacy. But in fact, mm-hmm. everything that happened at the National Convention underscored the uncertainty the party has about its own candidate and how mm-hmm. she will fare in the general election. They're not so confident about Hillary Clinton's position right now vis-a-vis Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing everything possible. And this the first thing they had to do was to kill off this mm-hmm. Sanders constituency and take it. We haven't seen reports about the level of irregularities and fraud, voter fraud, that that are directly linked to to Hillary Clinton's rise as the candidate of the party. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. So that's muffled. But then they had to publicly destroy this party. And that's not the party. Destroy this movement.
The small D party.
Yeah, exactly. To destroy it. Because, in fact, Hillary Clinton is not safe. She doesn't have the numbers. And she can't by herself make that claim. So she has to take the votes from wherever she can get it. And Bernie is where she could get at least some of his 13 million votes. She desperately needs it. She absolutely, she is not a strong candidate at all. She's got a lot going against her, but they're spending so much effort and time and money into creating the illusion that she is a strong candidate. She is not. And that is why they had to publicly destroy this movement and publicly have the leader of that movement consign, as if it's his property, consign his votes to her. That's why they did that.
Absolutely.
What is your feeling? You were a Bernie Sanders supporter. In this convention and the way the democratic process, the small d process, was handled, what did it make you feel like as a Bernie Sanders supporter?
Just totally thrown out with the bathwater, basically, kind of.
Did you feel more so against the party or more so against, this way, against Bernie?
No, not against Bernie.
But against the party?
Yes. Yes.
So.
Actually, go ahead.
Coming out of this convention, therefore, what do you think is the best way forward for what I would describe now as the remnants of this movement?
As a lot of people are suggesting, Jill Stein.
What do you think about that? You think that's a good choice of saying, okay, Bernie let us down, but we have to do something, and time is short, so we must do something, and we would instead gravitate toward Jill Stein?
It's probably a cop-out.
Why do you say that?
It's not. It's not like vote for the less worst candidate.
Okay. I see what you mean. It's not a good feeling that you're settling, and you've been made to settle because, for one reason or another, which is still to be revealed, the plotted course was just interrupted, and now you have to kind of figure out what's the best thing to do in a crisis-type situation, which is not the ideal way to operate. But this is part of the politics of how you operate within movements. You have to do what you have to do. Thanks so much for your call today and
Thanks,
for participating.
Yatrice.
Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I just wanted to say hello to the PRN audience too.
And, thank you.
And I wanted to say to you, the thing that I didn't really watch those conventions, but it's like everybody else. You just take a peek here and there, and then you listen to the news, and then you know what is happening and all that. I watch a lot of live streaming, people on the outside, streaming what was happening out on the street. That's what I did. And the most significant thing to me is the willing of the people inside the convention to fight back. And what am I saying that is because I believe it was on Tuesday that Pineda spoke, and people start chanting, no more war. And they turned the lights off on the people, especially it was the Ohio, I believe the Ohio delegation, who start shouting. And when they turned the light off, people are willing to fight back. Everyone took their cell phone and put the light on when they turned the lights off. And that is, to me, was tremendous. It's the willing of the people to fight back. Yesterday, another delegation, and I think it was either Arizona or Colorado, including the people from California. These people, they knew that they would turn the light off. So they were really willing to fight back. They had these fluorescent shirts that when they turned the light off and they were chanting.
Well, that's an ingenious idea.
I thought it was, you see, they never, the DNC never thought that these people, they would show up to fight. And not just one delegation, but very different delegations, the Ohio, the California, I believe it was either Arizona or Colorado. And these people, they're willing to fight back. That, to me, is what is out there right now. People wanted to fight. It wasn't not only inside the convention, but people outside the convention. One of the signs that I saw in one of those live streaming was, Hillary lies matter. And I thought it's tremendous what people are coming up with. So what I'm saying is, making a comparison to the RNC, you see the RNC, like Julie Giuliani talking about Iran and lying about what he was telling these people, and they accepted. Melania giving the speech word by word from Michelle Obama, Trump talking about nothing, and these people accepted. But, you know, the millennium, these people, they went for Bernie. I would say that more than half are people with college degree, the people that could think. People that you see, with the Republican, it doesn't matter what happened to them and what do. They'd rather just vote against their own interests. But this group of 13 million of people is a different group. And this is why the Democratic Party, they don't understand.
Well, I think the Democratic Party, as I said, one of the significant things that became obvious to me was that the Democratic Party is in a state of serious panic right now. It's doing everything possible to communicate the exact opposite, but it is in a state of panic for all kinds of reasons. Hillary Clinton is not the gift of a candidate as they imagined that she would be. She comes with a lot of baggage. Mm-hmm. We've had the Democratic Party implode with its own the revelation of the sabotage that it did to Bernie Sanders. We have the inexplicable behavior of Bernie Sanders being very, very quiet about having his movement torn to shreds and then cooperating and saying, well, yeah, we ought to now throw our support behind Hillary in the interest of party unity, and some really crazy explanations as to why he basically wants to scuttle this movement. So the Democratic Party is showing in so many ways that it is scampering. It is scampering to build or rebuild a political base. They do not have a solid base anymore. And the solid base that they have, which is the traditional solid bases that they have, which are the African-American and Latino bases that they've had, they're showing signs also of discontent. So the Democratic Party did a lot to try and convince people that it's got everything together. It does not. Everything about that convention indicated that they are in serious trouble. And the only place, the only way that Hillary Clinton has a fighting chance at all is if she gets a very large vote from the African-American and Latino communities. In particular, the millennials, they don't want any part of her. And the pool of white voters, it's so fickle, they cannot be relied upon to deliver for her. So they have to make up for that shortfall by really going all out for African-American and Latino voters. And that's why there was this entirely different scenario going on with the Democratic Convention, where you saw, oh, diversity galore. You have Muslims, you have African-Americans, you have Latinos, you have women, you have transgender, you have everybody under the roof, because they need those votes. And they're not solid yet with these constituencies.
I just wanted to say one more thing. You see, I don't want it to insult anybody, but those people that they voted for Bernie, that they Bernites, they should be really upset at Bernie. They should be really very upset at this man, because he was a setup. If he was a setup because no one wanted to run in the Democratic Party, and he was a setup. And now the millennials, a lot of them know, because just for the simple reason that this woman was sending this email and these emails were discovered. And now she, Hillary hired her on her team now. You're telling me that Hillary was in it. She was in it because she took her in to make sure that she doesn't speak up about what really went on. And another thing, and this guy that she just took as a vice president, it just a slap on the face all the way around. And a lot of people are talking about that here in New York. A lot of people, they're talking about that. So I just wanted to say that. And thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ali, for your call. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're discussing the significant outcomes of the Democratic National Convention. And Keisha, you're up next.
Hello, Utrice and the PRN audience.
Thank you.
What I noticed from the entire convention, but in particular last night, was the total disrespect, disdain, and marginalization of the Black community, in particular Black mothers. That should have solidified us not taking part in these national elections anymore. They didn't say anything to us. They weren't talking to us. They only used our imagery and images of people sprinkled in the audience and people coming up to speak just to give an okay to Team Hillary. I was totally disrespected. But it wasn't shocking. This is the climate that we live in. And I hope that everyone who was watching really paid attention to the language that was relayed to us. They are not speaking to us. They're just using us and hope to get Mrs. Clinton over the board in the polls. But I won't be taking part in this ever again until this system is dismantled. There's no way I can do it.
Well, let's get a little bit more detailed in your observation about why was this significant to you? The way you said the visuals of Blacks, but not necessarily having any corresponding authority or any really meaningful part in this Democratic Party and its process.
Well, I was looking at the people who were Team Hillary, those who are part of organizations and those who are in politics here in New York, and the crew that were there, you know, Tisha James, Hazel Dukes, and others. I mean, these people are a joke here in New York, and everybody knows that. And to have them shout and protest Team Hillary, you know, I'm with her, when they know for a fact that there is no agenda, no plan in place to deal with our issues. The night before, you had the mothers of slain young Black men speaking, you know, on behalf of Team Hillary. But what did she offer us? Is this going to stop? We don't need any more laws. We have enough laws on the books. They just have to be enforced for those who are in uniform. You had people like President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama speaking on behalf of Team Hillary when just two elections ago you were speaking against the woman. So what has changed? What has she told you that would give us any benefit in her being elected president? I mean, it's total disrespect. And I, like some of the other callers, we have to stay focused on local politics. We have to take control of that. There's no way on God's green earth am I voting for any Green Party candidate, because I have never seen a Green Party candidate come to my community, come to anything that we're doing in the community and address our issues or have a plan in place for us. So that's definitely out of the window. But I really can't take it anymore. And a lot of us who are younger, we see this very clearly, and we're at a point where we're fed up. And I have to say to local organizations, grassroots organizations, you have to get off your soapbox and you have to get involved more with the community, because we're ripe for the picking right now to take control of local politics. It's just that these organizations are not doing the work. We don't see them out here on the streets. They're not involved. They're not coming to where we live, anything. So it's just, you know, black faces in high places, and we're just fed up. And like your caller, I think it was, I can't remember his name right now, but it's on the tip of my tongue. He calls often, but, oh, Jay. Jay made it very plain that these are just shenanigans, and we have to see past that. And I don't know what's going to happen in this election. Me personally, I think that black people will put Hillary in office. Those who are 45 years and over going to make sure that happens if they can. But a lot of us are just fed up. We're fed up, and we're not taking part anymore.
I'll tell you, here's a surprising thing. I'm sensing that the white world that Hillary Clinton had previously charmed is no longer charmed. And quite a few have made their exit. They're not with Hillary. I mean, there's a level to which you just can't go below. And she has hit that level. And people take it personally that she's trying to drag everybody down with her. But I think, though, because we live in a race-based society, people may feel that way until they get to the voting booth, and then they say, okay, well, you know, it's for history. I'm voting for history's sake, and you know, and they change their vote. But the point I'm making is that is known. The fickle nature of the white vote is legendary. All pollsters know about you. You can't say for certain how white people will vote because they are fickle. They are a fickle sector of the voting public. Blacks and Latinos, however, are just plain loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
They like you, they like you. And the whole effort, this is what was significant to me about the Democratic National Convention, the strong emphasis on an integrated convention, a diverse convention. This was a message to me that the Democrats are very much aware of the fact that they are losing white votes. They can't count on the white vote like they used to. And they have to make up for an overwhelming showing in the progressive community, which is why they destroyed the Bernie Sanders movement and are attempting to snatch those votes and those people who are Bernie Sanders sympathizers. But they also have to do everything possible to bolster the black and Latino vote. And there are signs that blacks and Latinos are moving away. So the Democratic Party is not in a good place right now. They're scared. They are very scared. And everything, you take that whole convention, in the big picture, you see how they are expressing the fear and uncertainty about the fact that they cannot count. They're not in a position right now to say overwhelmingly they're in a safe place with regard to a vote from the Black, Latino, and even the white communities. They're not. Hillary Clinton is a hard sell, and they've come to realize that. But they're trying to, as I say, they're trying to spray perfume on a rotting corpse, and it is just not happening the way they think it's going to be happening.
I would agree.
Okay, thank you so much for your call, Keisha. Really enjoyed talking with you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
This is the Playing the Game, David, from Brooklyn, and I have a couple comments that I want to make. First of all, you know, we hear quite often about things like European people voting against their own interests. You know, we had the book What's the Matter with Kansas and so forth. But, you know, African-Americans and other people of color do the same thing. Many of us vote against our own interests. Now, what I'm taking away from this convention is that neoliberalism and the neoliberal express train has not stopped. You cannot reform the capitalist Democratic Party and get anywhere. You have to go outside of it. And as to your question, the takeaway thing that I got from this is that I did hear part of what Hillary had to say in her speech. This is the time for this capitalist Democratic Party to throw out a couple of bones. So when I heard her speak, she spoke about some of the things that Bernie Sanders had talked about. So her proposal to, let's say, placate some of the people is to take some of those things and throw out the bones. So that's what happens in capitalism. They do everything they can, usually, to accomplish their goal of profit for themselves. That's the ruling elite of capitalism. But occasionally, they have to throw out a couple bones to kind of keep down the masses. So if she does get in, she will throw out a couple bones, but it will be business as usual, imperialism, neoliberalism, all those things will stay in place. And then when the time comes, the bones that were thrown out will be collected again and taken away, as is the routine.
Did you get a sense at all that behind all of this hoopla, there is a genuine sense of fear and uncertainty about how Hillary will fare in the election?
Yes, I get that sense. I get that sense. I think, you know, some people are underestimating Donald J. Trump, but you know, he's got a very good chance of you know, achieving his goal. The point is that I think that that is one of the reasons that she made that speech where she threw out those things that would be appealing to a progressive constituency. So, you know, I think she's worried. And, you know, in terms of what's going to happen if she loses her loyal Negro voters, she'll be in big trouble. And, you know, I looked at the New York Times every day, and I see these hollering hooping and laughing people and cheering and whatnot. You know, it's just too much for me. I had to stop reading those articles about how happy those people are for Hillary Clinton. You know, it's ridiculous. So that may cause her to throw out a few extra bones for the people if she does get in.
But we are clear that whatever bones are thrown out, they are just platform planks. They're planks
That's
in the platform,
right.
And the platform has no legally binding obligation to it.
That's the comment.
Nobody ever fulfills everything in a platform at all. So, you know, a lot has been made about this business of, oh, it's going to be, you know, she's incorporating Bernie Sanders' ideas, which is a concession to his constituency and so forth. But really, these are just public relations efforts. They have legally binding value, none.
That's right. After she threw Bernie Sanders in front of the rhetorical firing squad and President Obama administered the coup de grace, you know, that movement is supposed to go away and corral some of those people that were in it, as many as they can get, to go and vote for her. But those people that didn't understand the game that's been played on them, they need to get out of the Democratic Party and we start building something else. You're not going to do it in a capitalist party. The capitalist party is not going to destroy itself to do what is necessary to serve the interests of the people. The people have to get in their heads. That party is interested in serving the ruling elite that's within the 1% or less than 1% that is involved in making profit.
What, therefore, is the task as it relates to Bernie Sanders and the people who supported and still are supporting this revolution that he talked about? What is the task there? This is unfinished business, it seems to me.
Yes, well, the task is to move over, get out of the Democratic Party, start organizing outside of the party, and that's the only way. You're not going to do anything within the party. So people have to get it through their heads that they're not going to change that. Those oligarchs and whatnot that run the party are not going to let that happen. They control all the media, and they control really everything. And, you know, so people have to get outside and stop hoping, you know, what did he say, hope and change. So that's not going to work. You can't reform that. You can't do what you'd like to do with the man-eating tiger. You can't do it. So people have to accept that the two-party system is not going to work for them, and they've got to do something else.
But in the shortfall, noting and that the election, the general election is in November.
There are two ways you can go on this. Number one, I'd say don't vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And the other thing is possibly if you feel like going for a third-party candidate, go ahead and do it. And, you know, but the point is, I could not vote for someone like that. And, you know, people have to get it in their head and stop voting out of fear. You know, that, oh, if I don't vote for her, Donald Trump will win. You know, we got to get away from that.
What do you envision the procedure to be with regard to Bernie Sanders? And he still is the titular leader of this movement. What is the procedure to be, as he's concerned, by the 13 million people who voted for him? What should happen there?
What should happen, I believe, is that you know, the leadership that was up there with Bernie should kind of corral those people to come outside of the Democratic Party And this is the embryonic stage of a movement that will derail these capitalist parties that are ruining the world. They're ruining the world because they've had capitalism all over, and capitalism means poverty for most of the people and riches for a few. So we have to move off, and the leadership of that movement and the people have to get together and get to something else that serves the interests of the people who live here and live throughout the world. Because capitalism means poverty. That's what it means, poverty.
Well, thank you so much for your input today, David. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
That pretty much puts us to the end of the program. And the reason we're talking about this is that very often we just accept, you know, this is happening, but we don't stop to interpret the reality that we're in. We take the messages that are given to us as somebody else's version of the reality that we're in, and we adopt it, or we just incorporate it. But no, when things are happening in this way, you have to stop and say, well, what are we witnessing here? And what am I supposed to be learning from this? Because in the end, we are political people. And politics is a day-to-day contact sport. You have to have your wits about you at all times. I'm going to do a pretty extended analysis of what happened here because it is so important to understand. There's so many layers to it. It involves the media. It involves the party, of course. It involves mostly, of course, the people and the mindset of the people. Because I believe, even at this sad hour, there is a great deal of potential if the power that the people have is actually aggregated and flexed. And it can be done. But we also have to come to terms with the fact that we too are responsible for the direction of the power we give to leaders. We're responsible for that. And we have to, with regard to Bernie Sanders, that is a big piece of unfinished business, and they better get to it soon. They have to publicly fire him, publicly cancel his contract, publicly declare him null and void, and move on. You see, because that too is the new direction that power must take. The people have to take control of the power that they invest, not only in individuals, but in movements. You have to do that. They have to perform this little ceremony to fire the leader and let people know that this is not a joke to you. You made an investment. And it was not his personal possession. It is a movement meant to benefit millions of people. So you also have to develop a method. You have to develop a system of disciplining the leader. When the leader misbehaves, sanctions must be public. And they have to do that. That brings us to the end of the program. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Always something to learn from Dr. Jack. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. It's the weekend. Keep positive. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. And avoid, astutely avoid, the other kind. Until then, we'll see each other Monday. Take care, a pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye. Carbon dust is a favorite beverage.